If it's 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, that means it's time for a conversation with Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth. What's on your mind this week?
I am still glowing, I guess the afterglowing of a fabulous weekend out at Live Oak Music Festival. It was really nice. Great music, wonderful people, wonderful weather. It was really nice. So yes, there is an afterglow that I'm sitting in. And I had an experience the first day on Friday. We kind of went in and got set up, the artist merch booth, and just getting the backstage all created. And there was a sound bath experience and meditation happening down at stage two. And I thought, oh, I love a sound bath. And so I went down to stage two, and there were people just kind of laying out on their yoga mats and their hay bales. And there's this beautiful music playing, gentle music playing in the wind. So I laid down on a hay bale and just kind of allowed myself to float along. And the leader of the sound bath was Bryn Albanese, who I've known just through name, but we've never really met in all these 40-something years I've lived on the Central Coast. But I knew her of her work. And it was such a beautiful experience. Also, she had me at Native American flutes. That was part of the meditation. I said, oh, I definitely want, I love that sound. So she was playing the flutes and then picked up her violin, was playing the violin. And there was this beautiful kind of background music. And, you know, in the background, you could hear wind. And then, you know, you could hear hawks calling in the background. And it just, the whole thing was beautiful. And I felt so relaxed, and I wanted to go on for hours. Even with all the activity around us, I was able to kind of slip into this really comfortable space. And then when Bryn brought us out of it, everyone looked at each other and said, did you see the hawk that was circling over the top of us the whole time calling out? And we're like, oh my gosh, I thought it was part of Bryn's back of her music. And I know there was the actual hawk, and there he was again. We looked up. And so the music, the sound bath with the flutes and the violin had called in the wildlife around us.
Wow.
And it was such a fabulous way to start the Live Oak Music Weekend. And so I introduced myself to Bryn and said, I want to bring this magical sound to my show on Tuesday, because there's so much healing and just grounding that goes into listening to sound, to music, and to get hit in that part. And there must be something about the indigenous flutes that hits me in my heart space, because it's so settling.
Primal, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah, just like that earth connection. And so fortunately for me, Bryn Albanese is here today to spend an hour with us. I'm talking about her fabulously colorful career as a professional concert violinist and touring, you know, across the United States, all through Europe, through Asia, through South America, for over 40 years. She spent 8 years working at the Philharmonic of The Hague. She's been a concertmaster for the Monterey Symphony. Then she spent 15 years, many people probably heard her as part of the world music of Café Musique. And then she took a turn, like many people during the pandemic era, and started looking for new ways to engage with her lifelong, you know, music career and her connection to others. And so she became a certified music practitioner, which she does now for Dignity Health on Central Coast, and is working as an end-of-life doula. She did that training as well, offering music sessions at people's bedside and skilled nursing facilities and memory care centers. And then as a graduate of the International End-of-Life Doula Association, she's also providing support and companionship to those that are terminally ill or actively dying, and also for their families. And then on top of that, with all of the spare time I assume she has,
right,
besides the music, she holds a monthly death cafe online with people who can come and talk about anything that has to do with death or dying. And so we have a lot to discuss. And I'm excited to jump right into it. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And you are welcome to be part of the conversation today. If you have any questions or comments for Bryn or myself, Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram if you'd like to leave a message there. Or you can send me an email after the show to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show. Wherever it is you find your podcast, search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe. And if you leave a review, other people can find us as well. And then we can share all this beautiful music. So we're going to take a quick break and listen to a little music by Bryn Albanese. And then we'll come back and start our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I almost had a concert with a Reluctant Therapist because I think that's how I'm feeling today. Bryn Albanese, thank you for joining me today.
Oh my gosh. I think I've wanted to be on this show for a long time. So, and it just happened. We met each other at Live Oak and it just was meant to be.
It was so meant to be.
Yeah.
And thank you for putting me in such a relaxed spot at the beginning of a really busy weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's talk about the song that we just came into the show with, because your eyes lit up. You looked a little surprised, like, oh, where was this and what is the piece?
So La Vie en Rose is a piece of music that I have played in so many different ways, different genres even. Café Musique used to play it a lot. I do have a version that I play in the hospitals. And I use a backing track with it. It's kind of more of a jazzy version. Mm-hmm. That, what we were just hearing, is John Knutson on piano at the Unitarian Universalist of San Luis Obispo and opening up, I think, one of the sermons. It was about being curious rather than furious and looking through life with rose-colored glasses. And I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful piece of music that can be used in a lot of different ways.
This is beautiful. And you're playing the violin. I wish people could see how jazzy your violin looks, the way it is decorated. It looks like your personality. It's sparkly and rhinestone-y and just gorgeous. How did you find your way to playing the violin of all the instruments you could have started with? Because you did come from a musical family.
Yeah. So my mom was a wonderful cellist, just a phenomenal cellist. My father played clarinet and saxophone and flute, and he was kind of the Mr. Holland's opus of Palos Verdes when he got a teaching job there. And so my parents used to take me and my brother to a lot of orchestra rehearsals. And they say, okay, you guys are going to behave and sit in the front row and do your homework. Anyway, all I could see were the violins and the cellos and the basses mm-hmm. from my view. And I didn't want to play what my dad was playing. I didn't want to play clarinet. I didn't want to play cello. Bass was too big. So the only thing left that I really could see were the violins. And the concertmaster was just like this sweet, sweet, wonderful woman. And my parents said, hey, you know, Bryn, I think I was 4 years old.
Oh.
What do you want to play? Is there an instrument that you want to play? And I just said, yeah, I want to play the violin. And thus it started with Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And I was with the same violin teacher for 14 years, which doesn't happen very often anymore. And her name was Elizabeth Ivanov Holborn, and she has forever shaped me as a violinist.
Why do people not generally stay with the same instructor?
I think it has to be all of the right ingredients. She was very stable in the community, stable as a concertmaster of the orchestra that my mom was principal cello of. And so she had like 60 students, and she was known for taking people from absolutely starting them from Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star mm-hmm. all the way up to the Tchaikovsky Concerto, which is what happened with me. And it's just one of those anomalies that just doesn't happen very often anymore.
Were you gifted on the violin from the beginning?
Yes, I was.
So it must have been great to take something up and be good at it.
Yeah, I mean, technically, you do have to practice. Mm-hmm. Practice makes whatever perfect means.
Yes.
And I do have a natural sense of musicianship that you can't really teach that to anybody. You either have it or you don't. Mm-hmm. You can encourage somebody to write stories about the music that they're playing. My teacher did that. She made me write a story about almost every piece of music that I had been playing. You know, what does this remind you of? What is a picture that you can paint in your mind mm-hmm. and that you can paint for the audience? So I already had a super active, proactive teacher who said, you want to touch people's hearts. Mm. And so I had that from age 4 all the way till age 17, and that made a huge difference.
How does writing about the piece you're playing impact how you play it?
Well, it's like a moving picture mm-hmm. in your mind. And so if she made me write a story about the piece, I would have to play it. And those words would have to come out in the notes.
Mm.
And I really think that that's a huge thing. Just like singing teachers, vocal teachers want people to feel, they want their students to feel the music mm-hmm. and have the music come out of them and tell a story. It's very similar to that.
Mm. What a beautiful way to make the instrument almost part of your whole being. And not separate. Because I would imagine if you're playing, you're just trying to hit notes, it's almost like it's not attached to you. But if you're visualizing what the story is that you're playing, it's a whole different experience.
Oh, absolutely. I think Bryn lives in a fantasy world most of the time.
Which hence your beautiful violin looks like it would be in a fairy tale.
Yes, this violin is carbon fiber. A lot of people know me now as carrying around this black carbon fiber violin with Swarovski crystals at the beginning of COVID because there wasn't anything else to do. And it was my Karate Kid wax on, wax off thing where I would put each one of these crystals on the violin, hoping that it would transform my brain into something creative. And it did.
Interesting.
It actually really did. It helped me so much kind of figure out what I was going to do next.
Well, because for many, I mean, I guess all artists, with the pandemic and not being able to be in front of people, you lost a part of yourself that was really foundational, correct? Because you had been touring the world and playing with symphonies and acting with Cafe Musique. I mean, just music and entertaining for decades.
Yeah.
And then it stops.
You hit the nail on the head with the word entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did not realize that I was doing more than that.
Mm.
That my music, even with Cafe Musique, people would come up to us afterwards and say, oh, you guys played that piece. My grandmother loved that. And you just played it so beautiful. And they would start crying. And I realized also playing solos on the PAX stage, you know, or playing concertmaster for slow symphony and playing a solo, that people were being affected by music much more than I had ever realized until the pandemic hit. Because that was what they starved for the mm-hmm. most mm-hmm. was what are we going to do now? We can't have our music, our live music fix.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that music was striking a chord, without a better word to find, inside of not only my listeners, but me
mm-hmm.
as well. And did I want to keep doing what I was doing? Did I want to keep playing in 5 different orchestras and traveling around, Café Musique was already saying goodbye, and actually we only had one farewell concert, and that was at I don't remember which winery. It was way out east of Paso Robles, and we had one farewell concert. There were about 400 people there, and we had about five scheduled all over the place, but we couldn't do it. And then I at that point, I also realized, I think I'm in this by myself now, and we can't rehearse with anybody. I have got to create something that I can do on my own. And that was my one-woman show. Just like so many people on the internet, I searched around for wonderful accompaniment parts and backing tracks and started playing with them and being creative, buying battery-powered equipment and going off into people's driveways and cul-de-sacs and wherever I could fit in back of pickup trucks outside. You know, I would be out in the middle of a cornfield or an olive orchard playing my violin, being safe during the pandemic. And that was what started me thinking that I wanted to take that healing aspect of music that people would go to a concert at the PAC. We all were there for the same reason, to let go of our day and listen to the music and be affected by the experience of listening to it. And what was it doing to our psyches? What was it doing to our brains? How were we able to calm ourselves by just listening to this music? And I wanted to take that and use it in a much more intimate way. And hence, that's when I decided that being a type of music therapist was something that I could do during the pandemic, because we were just at home and everything was online. And so that's what happened.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Brynn Albanese, and we're talking about her life through music and all the different transformations that you've had. And I love the music therapy world, and I love that there is a place for the certified music practitioner, because it's different. You know, for those who don't know, a music therapist goes and gets their clinical degree. They have a music degree, and then they also do the psychotherapeutic training. And so it's a different way of working with music and individuals. And then from what I understand from the certified music practitioner, you're playing for people at their bedside and bringing that calm and that grounding and that sense of relief by performing and sharing your gifts with them. Well, and not as much of the therapeutic piece as far as the client making their own music or participating.
Actually, I'm going to correct one thing.
Okay.
I am not performing for people as a practitioner. Mm-hmm. I am doing music as a service.
I like that.
So
term.
When I went through my program, my teachers say music therapists take patients to an end goal. Mm-hmm. Just like any type of therapist.
Yes.
So a practitioner treats patients in the moment, and I couldn't believe how much work I had to do scientifically in these courses. I had to learn about frequencies and vibrations and what is the most healing combination of such for different patient conditions. Everything from cardiovascular to neurological disorders, renal failure, UTIs, I mean, dementia. It just, there were so many different patient conditions that required a different type of music or a different way of playing music. And that was, Elizabeth, that was the most challenging thing for me, to not be Brynn Albanese, the performer, but to be Brynn Albanese, the practitioner, the music as a service, and meeting a patient in the moment where they are at that time was so hard.
When you talk about being of service, and is the client telling you about their favorite music, or you having to understand what their health condition is and with your training understand what sounds or frequencies would be best serving them?
A little bit of both, but the latter part of what you said is what comes first. I have to know why they're there. Mm-hmm. So being certified, I have to go through the HIPAA compliance. Mm-hmm. So the nurses are allowed to say, hey, this person in blah, blah, blah room, they had a stroke and they've been back and forth and they're here. And that would tell me right away what type of music to play for that patient and what tempo, what register. And then when I'm sitting in front of them, I have learned through my program and also through my practicum to read them.
Mm-hmm.
And that intuition has never been so strong for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just getting stronger and stronger. And at age 57, I never thought that I would be able to read people as well as I can now, especially by the bedside.
And what's interesting, because to circle back to the writing a story about the music you played as a child, I would imagine that tapping into that visualization and connecting the sounds to the stories had to have helped you in being able to do that work today.
Oh, absolutely. I do definitely paint a picture.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is that I'm a totally classically trained violinist.
Yeah.
And here I am playing, you know, like, am I going to be playing? People think, oh, well, Bryn's going to be playing classical music by the bedside. No, I'm playing pieces like You Are My Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
What a Wonderful World. Mm-hmm. Patsy Cline Crazy. I mean, these are all on my album. I recorded an album because I kept hearing stories from patients about why something I played for them was so meaningful, if they were able to say something.
Mm-hmm.
Many times I'm playing in the ICU and somebody's completely intubated.
Yeah.
And if they're intubated, I still have to choose very certain type of music. But if somebody's able to verbalize why a piece of music that I have chosen was perfect for them, and they kept saying the same songs kept coming up over and over again. And that was the hard part for me, because I just want to accessorize everything, you know, and not just my violin and me, but I want to accessorize and make something really complicated and
layered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's a great word, layered. But in this work, it has to be very, very two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. Just personal for
even
that one
dimensional
person.
Yeah. Three-dimensional is when you get discharged from the hospital. That's when I get to play something called distraction music.
Oh.
And that is just time that passes by. And then there's a type of music that I play called memory music, which is sort of obvious, you know, singing in the rain and moon mm-hmm. river. And
that hits an era that mm-hmm. person relates to.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And working for Dignity Health, I came across a lot of Latino patients. Did I have music for them? No.
Mm.
I fell short and planned a trip to Guadalajara to visit some friends and collect Mexican folk songs for my work, specifically at Dignity Health. And I'm telling you, I have made so many grown men in hospital gowns cry. I have done my job.
Yes.
And because I am bringing music home and bringing them home, these men and women, just listening to these Mexican folk songs and being like, how do you know that? You know, like, and my friends in Mexico saying, these are the pieces of these are the songs, these are the pieces of music that really touch people in Mexico. And I brought those to Dignity Health, and I'm constantly collecting more.
Can we get to one of the songs? Is that something you can pull up quickly? Or what's your favorite, easiest pull?
Do you want me to play? I can play a Mexican song.
I want
for
you,
you guys.
I want it to whatever calls you.
Actually, let's do the one that was in the sound bath, and then
okay.
I'll tell you why that one is specifically important to me.
I love that.
So this is a version of Stand By Me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a version that is very slow. It's totally different than what most people would think. I also like to put nature sounds. I'm a real nature girl. And I think music and nature go absolutely together. And it was wonderful to play outside at Live Oak.
It was perfect.
It was really perfect because there were millions of birds everywhere. So this is Stand By Me, and this is from my album. Starts with wind.
Bryn's album is called From My Heart to Yours. So what comes up for you as you're playing? Because I love watching the expression on your face as you're moving with the music.
Oh. I'm thinking during that of my mother. And my mama passed away February of 2025. The CD, the physical CD, came just after she went into an actively dying coma. And I can explain what that is in a moment. And in her dementia, music became extremely important to her. It's funny because she had quit the cello in her late 50s due to pain from arthritis and all kinds of other issues. And she didn't really... She always came to my shows. She always came to my concerts, and she loved that. But she never listened to music at home. But when she fell into her dementia, she began to listen to music all the time. That PBS, that Masterpiece Performance Channel was on. She just loved it. And it was just – and I would play for her. All of the time I would play different songs, and it became that important. So my mom passed away at about 9:30 p.m. on February 10th. And about 12 midnight, the mortuary people still hadn't come. And we had dressed her in her favorite top, and we had washed her and done all of this beautiful, beautiful things that I learned as a doula also. And I decided to go and get my album and just play Stand By Me and hold her hand after she was gone. And I played Stand By Me. I don't know why I picked that, but I guess I whispered in her ear. I said, "Mom, I want you to stand by me when I need you." And I was going to play her something else, and my phone died, and my speaker died, and I could not get it to work again. And I swear, it was my mom saying, "That was it, honey. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all you got to do." Mm-hmm. So now it's one of the most relaxing pieces of music that I play for people. But I also have experienced at one of the hospitals, somebody actually passing away as I was playing that. So it's a poignant piece for me, and it carries many memories, some fresh and some old.
I can see it in your expression. It's just there. You're embodying the whole piece. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Bryn Albanese. Did I say it?
Well, yes, Albanese.
Albanese.
You have to say it with your hand.
That helped. She is a professional concert violinist, but also a certified music practitioner and end-of-life doula. She's my guest today. We're going to listen to more music and get to know how this practice has changed and transformed her life. You're also invited to be part of the conversation if you have a question or comment at 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm telling you, Brent, it's going to be a concert with a reluctant therapist. It's the only thing that I have to keep catching myself. Can you talk about this piece that we're listening to?
Yes. Okay. So, Elizabeth, I love that you went to YouTube and picked up something. I wasn't expecting you to pick that.
I pulled the things that moved me when I was hearing them and put them and figured you would tell me why they moved me.
That's so awesome. So that piece is called Preludium and Allegro, and it's by Fritz Kreisler. So Kreisler was an Austrian violinist who was so incredibly creative. And talk about painting pictures with his music. Mm-hmm. Liebeslied and Love's Joy and Schön Rosmarin, Beautiful Rosemary. I mean, he wrote Viennese waltzes and all. I mean, he was amazing. He tried to get into the Vienna Philharmonic, and he didn't get in because his vibrato, which is what makes the music so beautiful, the vibrato was too wide. Like they
too showy.
Were like, yeah, too showy. Like he really stuck out too mm-hmm. much, which is funny because when I auditioned for the Boston Symphony like four times and I got to the last five people like three out of four times and they never would give me a contract. And finally, Maestro Seiji Ozawa took me into his office and he basically told me the same thing that Kreisler was told by the Vienna Philharmonic. You are such a special individual that you are not one of my robots. You're not one of my violin machines. That you need to find a group that is more accepting of this type of thing. And he was right. And that's what made me go overseas and look at European orchestras, because they're, I don't know, they're more open, a little bit more open over there. So that piece, Preludium and Allegro, is something that I have been playing. My violin teacher, she made me write a story about that too. And for the life of me, I can't remember what it is, because I'm sure it's changed by now. But it's one of the most fun pieces to play. It's like a showpiece, but it's also classical in the sense that it has to be, the rest of the piece is based on that theme that you just heard. It's the same chords over and over again, and it's an awesome piece.
Yes, it's beautiful. And I knew you would have the story for it.
Yeah.
And while you were playing overseas, and I think I have the timing correctly, that you lost your brother. And that led to you coming back to the United States, his unexpected death. And then you had a series of other deaths that happened back to back. And through that grieving process, you tapped into your desire to be able to be of service, because service, it seems to be important to you in how music plays. And you went to do the training to be an end-of-life doula with the International End-of-Life Doula Association. And how did that change you, and how did that help you deal with the grief and loss that you experienced back to back to back?
Yes, I don't know. Something happened inside of me when I lost my brother. My brother and I were very, very, very close. And he was mentally ill. He suffered with obsessive compulsive disorder and body dysmorphic syndrome. And he felt like he had a cancer. And he did call me on the phone. And I was in the Netherlands at the time. And he said, "Bryn, you have to let me go." And I'm like, "Well, what are you talking about?" I'm going to commit suicide. And so he was basically calling me to ask my permission. So 2 hours later, we're still on the phone, and I'm trying to convince him, you know. But then I realized that he had been in so many different facilities, and it really was like a cancer. And he's like, "We're going to see each other again someday," you know. So I had to let him go. And 4 days later, he was gone. And I think that really, I had lost my best friend in college before that. And I think those experiences began to sort of shape the way that I thought about death. I became more terrified, actually, of it. It didn't help me at all. But I also began to watch people who had cancer take their last breath or go through all the treatments, like from start to finish. And then there started these YouTube channels where people would document their entire journey through cancer. And I kept watching those, and I would watch morbid things, and I was like, "What is wrong with me? Like, I am so not that type of person." I mean, I love horror movies. I love a good horror movie. But this, that definitely doesn't shape me, and it doesn't seem right. I think the whole time I had been thinking to myself that the people in my life who had committed suicide, and there were four of them, my fiance and both of my college roommates, all committed suicide. I was like, "What if you could have a good death? What if you could choose to have a type of death that you want to have? Not a car accident, not something that was unplanned, but what if you could plan something?" And then I realized that there was a place you could go to, like, learn how to do that. And I also, at that point, made another realization that I naturally kind of had that inside of me, that intuition again, of how to help people have a good death. Because when we're born, most of us, I think most people have a good birth. And we prepare very well for it. The parents prepare, the grandparents prepare, everybody prepares. Mm-hmm. And you have a midwife and everything is laid out. There's lots of smiles and happy faces. But then we live our whole lives and we do what we do. And what happens at the end?
Why? Very mysterious and hidden and unspoken of.
Why can't we have something like that? I mean, my mama loved the Super Bowl. So by golly, 9 days before she passed away, it was February 8th was the Super Bowl. She passed away 2 days later. We went in with our burgers and our hot dogs and our salad and our chips and our beer, and we put the TV on really loud. My mom was completely in an actively dying coma, which is there wasn't any movement at all. It was like the only thing that was left that was alive was her brainstem was keeping her alive. And we watched that Super Bowl, and it sucked. It was a horrible Super Bowl. But I will never forget that. I will never forget that we gave my mom a great death. Mm-hmm. And we had a doula. And she was the most amazing woman. She sat with my mom. She held her hand. She read to her. She played music on her phone. I mean, she was there as a presence, as a healing presence by the bedside. And she was there for my mom, but she was also there for us and helped us keep our heads screwed on straight, because that's what doulas do. They are the non-emotional entity that is so important in the household. Mm-hmm. So I hope I've answered your question. I went off on another subject. But
I can see how you were drawn. I mean, because the interconnectedness with your love of music and the service through the serving people in that way, to be able to be part of the death process as well. I'm also fascinated with that for the same reasons that we celebrate birth and we hide death and then we put terror around the idea of death. And it's that the grief then becomes more large and more raw because people are so unprepared for the inevitable piece.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Bryn Albanese.
That's right.
Thank you. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And I started the show talking about the sound bath. And I don't know if that's something new that you started incorporating into your work, but it was beautiful because you had, I don't know what the drum was called, the black.
Oh, yeah. That is something that somebody let me borrow, but I don't know if I'm ever going to give it back, but it's called a tongue drum.
That was fabulous. And then the bells, they're not really bells.
It's called a chime curtain. I call it a chime curtain.
I'll go with that. And then you were playing the violin, and then I heard the sounds of the indigenous flutes, the Native American flutes. How did you come to start playing this instrument? Oh.
So about 20 years ago, I bought a flute from a gentleman who lived in the Mojave, lives still in Joshua Tree, John Stillwell. I bought a flute because I thought it would be really neat to be out in nature and go camping and just play this flute around by the campfire as a pentatonic scale, which is very, very different than a Native American style flute. So we're not talking about like a penny whistle or a regular flute that you play in orchestra.
The one I had to play in fourth grade.
Exactly. These have a much more, the indigenous sound of them is this particular scale. And I have with me, I brought two different flutes. And the first one, the first flute I ever bought, I don't have with me today, but I do have the flute that I mostly use in the hospital. And then I have what I respectfully call my death flute with me. And the reason why I started playing these flutes for my work was really weird. It just came out of nowhere. When I was playing my violin for somebody who was in an actively dying stage, or maybe even before that, sound can be an issue because your body is going through a war. Inside a metabolic war, and sound can be a difficult thing to process through your vagus nerve. So the violin, the E string is very, very high and very shrill, and it vibrates very, very fast. If you play cello, it's a little easier because it's a lower instrument and you can get those vibrations to be much more wide, if you will. The Native American flute, being wooden, has that amazing sound that just magically brings everybody to a new place and a different place. So I think this is on right now. I'm going to play just the scale of this one flute.
Okay.
So. Sorry about that. Now that is not, that's just the scale, but
so what is it about that sound? Because you mentioned the vagus nerve. Is it resonating with certain parts of the body, almost like a vibration that centers the? Because I can feel that, but I'm sure there's a scientific explanation for what I'm feeling.
Yes, yes. There are certain vibrations that resonate with our own vibrations, and some people feel that this particular flute I just played does that for them. It has a more breathy sound to it. So that vagus nerve is through your ear. And it gets sent out into the nervous system in a way that's different for everybody who listens to it. This is one of my favorite flutes to play because ergonomically, I mean, if people could see it, it's against my body. And it's much easier to play than the next flute that I'm going to play for you, which is Big Bertha. We call her Big Bertha. She, this flute that I just played a little bit is made of walnut and it has some cherry wood on it. It's very pretty.
It is.
And you can't blow very hard into it. A lot of native flute players use reverb on their recordings, and for a good reason, because they... But it's also really, really nice by the bedside to not have any of that and just do what I just did for you in the studio. Do you want me to play the
other one? I mean, we have 10 minutes left. I just want you to play the flute until I feel my center. Because you're using it in your death doula practice, but I would also imagine, having worked with music therapists, that for someone in a highly anxious state – this could bring, like, the nervous system back into regulation. Just when I'm hearing it, I can feel that in myself. And I would imagine when young children are around these sounds, you could, because they are so much more easily grounded.
Yes. Autism, I play sometimes for autistic groups, dementia. What it does is it does exactly what you're saying. I don't know how magically it does what it does, but like for my mom, there is a YouTube video that on my YouTube channel that's hard for many people to watch as a trigger, and it's her entering what's called an actively dying stage. So terminal agitation is when a patient is not taking comfort care medications yet. So there's no morphine, there's no fentanyl, there's no lorazepam, there's nothing involved keeping the patient under, you know, keeping them asleep. So my mom's going through this war inside where her body is trying to shut down and she's making all these weird sounds and breathy things, and it sounds like she's in pain and the family members are freaking out. Everybody's like, we have to do something. So I brought out My flute, I brought out this redwood huge F sharp 432 hertz. So that's a frequency that is considered a shamanic frequency. And it's a shamanic tuning. And so this flute, I started playing for my mom. And visibly, you could see by the time 3 minutes or so went by that her balled up hands began to relax. She wasn't shaking as much. She almost was singing with the flute, and she was doing these long, big, labored breaths with it. Mm-hmm. And her eyes were kind of sort of half open. It's the video is fascinating, and I highly recommend people go and look at it if they have.
How would they find your YouTube?
It's Bryn Albanese, violinist. You can find it there. You can also go to my website, just BrynAlbanese.com.
A-L-B-A-N-E-S-E.
That's right.
Okay. Let's get some Big Bertha on.
Yeah. So I'm going to do this little backing track with it. And here we go.
I'm going to lay on the floor. This is my guest, Bryn Albanese, playing her Big Bertha Indigenous flute. The hour goes by much too quickly because I wanted to talk about the sound bath experience. It's new to you as well. Can you give a one-minute description?
So I have been doing a lot of dancing ecstatic dancing. People have know that I have gone through a major transformation. I lost 105 pounds, and it has freed me to experience a lot of things. And one of them is dancing, and I had offered to use my flutes and my violin at the end of some of these dancers as a sort of a closing. And then suddenly the chime curtain came in, and then storytelling with music came into my life, and I started using all these different instruments and bells and chimes and whistles and all the stuff, and I realized, hey, these are sounds too, and they can be extremely healing for people. So now I've suddenly experienced Live Oak Music Festival, which was a 30-minute meditation that I created. And I have decided that I'm going to record it and release it.
Yeah. So if people want to work with you in any of the forms through your end of life work or the sound bath, how do they find you?
They can go to my website, brynalbanese.com, A-L-B-A-N-E-S-E. And you can send me a message there. You can find me on Facebook. I do a lot of Instagram and Facebook with all aspects of my life. My concert series will continue, and storytelling with music. And I'm really good with texting, so people can text me and once they get my number, and we can have a conversation about end of life and Death Cafe and anything else that anyone wants to talk about.
I love that. You are clearly a woman in service of the world and just beautiful, Bryn. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can always find me by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show to share with your friends. As always, I appreciate you tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Wise men say that rushing is violence, and so is your silence when it's rooted in compliance. To stand firm in loving defiance, make archer alliance, give voice to the fire. Move people to the beat of the wind, gather yourself and begin to dance the song until it ends. We are winners, champions of the light, forming in numbers and might. Keep the truth close inside.
Medicine woman, medicine man, walk in with grace. I know your face and I trust your hand. Medicine woman, medicine man, walk in with grace. I know your face and I trust your hand. Find your teachers in the voice of the forest. Unplug, you can't ignore this wisdom of the voiceless. Remedies are bountiful and surround us from the garden to the farthest. Prayer made of stardust. Find your healing in the music that calls you, the voice that enthralls you. What do you belong to? Eyes up, there's the setting of the sun. Give thanks to each and every one. The lesson is the medicine woman. Medicine man.